For part of our series on men in America, we asked the question, what actor or character comes to mind when you think of an iconic man?
Jack Nicholson.
George Clooney, I guess.
Brad Pitt. He's played Achilles, and that's one of those archetypes of males from ancient history.
Indiana Jones. Intelligent guy, but also very physical and rugged. And, of course, always saving the woman at the end.
That's Richard Mead of Fairfield, Connecticut. We also heard Will Rodriguez Kennedy of San Diego, Peter Jones of Scottsdale, Arizona, and Bill Maher from Trumbull, Connecticut.
Now it's movie critic Bob Mondello's turn. Here's his take on how Hollywood has defined manliness and how that's been challenged.
Tony Curtis used to say that he'd learned how to kiss a girl by watching Cary Grant at the movies, and I'm assuming he wasn't just sitting behind him at the theater, at, say, To Catch a Thief.
Never had a better offer in your whole life.
You know as well as I do, this necklace is imitation.
Well, I'm not.
Tony Curtis was hardly alone in taking instruction from films. Movies have always offered a window through which audiences can observe human nature without being observed, where a man can learn how to make things right, the way John Wayne did.
Pilgrim, you caused a lot of trouble this morning. Might have got somebody killed. Somebody ought to belt you in the mouth. But I won't. I won't. The hell I won't.
Movies will teach you to sacrifice for the greater good, like Humphrey Bogart.
If that plane leaves the ground and you're not with him, you'll regret it. Maybe not today.
Learn how to stand firm against injustice, like Spencer Tracy.
I say that you cannot administer a wicked law impartially.
Learn how to stand up for yourself, like Sidney Poitier.
I'm married 11 years, and I got a boy who's got to sleep in the living room, because I got nothing. Nothing to give him but stories.
All of this was useful for a nation that thought of itself as a melting pot. For generations, immigrants had emerged slowly from ethnic enclaves where things were just like the old country. It was hard, but film, even back when it was silent, was like an instruction manual. For a nickel at the Nickelodeon, a foreign guy fresh off the boat could see exactly how American men dressed, how they greeted each other with a handshake, not with European kisses on each cheek, how people behaved here, which in silent film was stereotypical. Women domestic, delicate, and passive, men outgoing, strong, and active. Film's power of suggestion became so influential, so overwhelming, in fact, that some argued it should be curbed. In the 1930s, the film industry created a production code that laid out a set of strict rules for filmmakers, banning drunkenness, sex, revenge plots, all forms of immorality, and stating explicitly that no movie should throw audience sympathy to the side of wrongdoing. You couldn't do most of Shakespeare under those rules, but you could have strong, manly, family-friendly heroes. Which meant, as the Blue Noses intended, that Hollywood, having been told what it could show, was in effect telling audiences what they should be, portraying human behavior, especially male behavior, in idealized, heroic terms that mere mortals might have trouble living up to.
Liberty is too precious a thing to be buried in books, Miss Saunders. Men should hold it up in front of them every single day of their lives and say, I'm free.
Then, after World War II, the code started fraying around the edges as competition from television cut into Hollywood's bottom line. What could film offer that TV couldn't? Well, foreign films had nudity, indie films offered rebellion. The studios wanted a piece of that action, so they stopped restricting filmmakers and started alerting audiences through ratings. And as soon as the restrictions were gone, leading men in movies became more like men in real life, not always strong or good or forceful. Dustin Hoffman became a huge star, playing a total slacker in The Graduate.
Ben, what are you doing?
Well, I would say that I'm just drifting here in the pool.
Why?
Well, it's very comfortable just to drift here.
Have you thought about graduate school?
No.
Would you mind telling me then what those 4 years of college were for? What was the point of all that hard work?
You got me.
Peter Fonda easy rode his way across America. Paul Newman and Steve McQueen played anti-heroes and got labeled the kings of cool. John Travolta was that era's Fred Astaire. All recognizable as people, not icons. All nuanced and vulnerable and incapable of being like the men of old Hollywood because the world had changed too much, as Woody Allen demonstrated by conjuring up Bogey to help him man up in Play It Again, Sam.
Boris, men's spray deodorant, and Johnson & Johnson baby powder.
For Christ's sake, kid, you're going to smell like a French cat house.
I need them.
Why? You ashamed to sweat?
I want to make an impression.
Somewheres in life, you got turned around. It's her job to smell nice for you.
Testosterone was in full retreat by the 1980s. Movies made for teenagers had teen heroes, not adult males. Roger Moore's James Bond started poking fun at the kind of suave his predecessor had played straight, and romance devolved from Cary Grant to Hugh Grant.
To recap in a slightly clearer version, in the words of David Cassidy, in fact, while he was still with the Partridge family, I think I love you.
This sort of eloquence would lead to the adult male as overgrown child in Judd Apatow comedies, and elsewhere were dads who turned themselves into Mrs. Doubtfire to rule the roost, sensitive bad guys, earnest good guys, gay guys who wish they could quit each other, and action heroes like Jason Bourne who literally don't know who they are. Men, in other words, became varied and human and unambiguously authentic on screen. But audiences still want heroes, and more important, will pay to see heroes, which means Hollywood needed to find a way for males to be heroic again. The solution, which turned out to be a multi-billion-dollar solution, make them super heroic. Men of iron who care.
There is no version of this where you come out on top. Maybe your army comes, and maybe it's too much for us, but it's all on you. Because if we can't protect the Earth, you can be damn well sure we'll avenge it.
From John Wayne to Iron Man, not such a stretch, really. Icons both, standing tall, fighting for the greater good, manly in a way that may not be entirely human, or even something most people would want to live up to, but that sure looks great in CinemaScope. I'm Bob Mandela.
Okay, now we want to know about manliness in a way that is entirely human. What are the movies that make men cry? Bill Maher of Trumbull, Connecticut, points to this Jack Nicholson and Helen Hunt film.
As good as it gets.
I might be the only person on the face of the earth that knows you're the greatest woman on earth.
She helped him become more of a decent person. Yeah, that almost brought tears to my eyes.
Oh. End of Watch.
That's the Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Peña cop movie.
Where he loses his partner.
I'm not going to die. God loves cops.
I can cry. In the Marine Corps, you learn that men do cry. If they don't, there's something wrong.
That manly guidance comes from Will Rodriguez Kennedy of San Diego. So, guys, it's time to share. Tell us about the movies that make men cry.
The scenes that get you verklempt. It's okay, we're all friends here.
Join the conversation. Write us at npr.org or Facebook or tweet to us, #MenPR. We'll break out the tissues and air some of your comments next week.